Tim's News Explosion. 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 Tim's News Explosion.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this week's Tim's News Explosion on this Monday, the 22nd of April, 2024, Anzac Week. We are live on the Wilmsfront YouTube, Odyssey, and Rumble channel. Hello to everyone tuning in the live chat. Hello there, Dawn Browning. It is 9 p.m. here in Melbourne, Victoria, where in a perverse way, another suspected mushroom poisoning death in regional Victoria, this time in the town of Clunes, which is a town outside of Ballarat, helped calm the national mood after the Bondi and Wakely stabbings in Sydney, where the response from our leaders and law enforcement has been not to protect the rights of Australians to go about their business without being stabbed by mentally ill maniacs or terrorists, but to protect us from seeing that these attacks ever happened, for our safety, of course. Forget real life safety. Online safety is the real priority, led by Australia's E-Safety Commissioner, E. Karen, or E. Helen Lovejoy, Julie Inman Grant, who ordered social media to take down the live stream footage of the terrorist attack on the Bishop Marie Emmanuel of the Christ of the Good Shepherd Church, which occurred just before last week's Tim's News Explosion at his regular Monday Bible study, which started at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The bishop, thankfully, is making a full recovery. Now, the E-Safety Commissioner, who I should also mention is a World Economic Forum regular devotee at Davos, she held a press conference last week to ensure Australians she was keeping us safe from reality.
The attacks at the Fairfield Church yesterday. Well, we have a range of graduated powers. There could be civil proceedings, and we could take them to court, or we could fine them. Of course, the quantum of the fine would depend on the gravity of the noncompliance, but we can use graduated tools like linked deletion notices. So if they fail to remove the content, then we can go to the search engines such as Google or Bing to really minimize the amount of content the Australians can see.
And how much time do they have to remove this?
We expect them to remove this expeditiously within the next 24 hours. We know that every minute counts. And the more this content is up there, the more that is re-shared, the more the velocity and the virality continues. And we need to stem that.
You do have powers to remove this content if it's not actioned on by these companies. Are you prepared to use those powers if they don't come to the table?
We've already just issued a notice to X Corp to use these formal removal powers. We will be issuing notices to Meta today.
Now, that video mashup was put together by Craig Kelly, who's now the National Director for Pauline Hanson's One Nation Party. So you heard her there that if Twitter X does not remove the Wakely stabbing video, she's going to limit what we can see on search engines. And breaking today, the Federal Court of Australia upheld the E-Safety Commissioner's takedown notice to X to block not just the stabbing of Bishop Mari Emanuel in Australia, but worldwide, because Australians can still circumvent the ban with a VPN. So Australia is actually banning this, the resharing of this. This actually happened. This is not misinformation. This is something that actually happened last Monday evening. The Australian E-Safety Commissioner and the Australian Federal Court have ruled it's an interim ruling until there's going to be another hearing later this week. So it is banned on social media for everyone in the world. And Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, who's a communications minister, Michelle Rowland, increased the funding for the eSafety Commissioner to the tune of $132 million extra over the next 4 years. So that is not the total budget. So it's gone from, it already had $10 million per year. It has quadrupled to $42.5 million Australian dollars each year. And Anthony Albanese, and he's talked about that, part of it's clear from his press conference. He said we need to retain social cohesion and harmonious multicultural society. So this is also why it's important that the eSafety Commissioner take down this video of this terrorist attack. This was what he posted to his own Twitter X account, ironically, last week.
Media companies, including social media companies, have a responsibility to act. It shouldn't need the eSafety Commissioner to intervene, to take down violent videos. Social media companies that make a lot of money out of their business have a social responsibility. We are prepared to take whatever action is necessary to hold these companies into line.
And the New South Wales Premier, Chris Minns, the conversation, our leaders, they've talked about, well, not only do we need to give the eSafety Commissioner more powers to protect us from news, but it's also being the events of the past week in Sydney are being used as a justification for the Albanese government to resurrect the mis and disinformation laws. This was New South Wales Premier Chris Minns last week.
Yeah, look, I'm shocked, but I'm not surprised. This is exactly as I'd expect from X or Twitter or whatever you want to call it, a disregard for the information that they pump into our communities. Lies and rumours spreading like wildfire, and then when things go wrong, throwing their hands up in the air to say that they're not prepared to do anything about it. We've had enough. Sydney's had enough. Young police officers who have to go into harm's way to calm down a riot based on a rumour or innuendo means that their job is virtually, it's next to impossible for them. So it's about time that we strengthen rules in relation to the eSafety Commissioner, or the federal government, or penalties that are in place for social media companies. We would all be in favour of that, because it's hard enough to calm down a community at 2 o'clock, 2 p.m. on a Friday afternoon. To do it at 1 or 2 in the morning when rumours are spreading like wildfire is virtually impossible.
So he said that a riot occurred because of rumours, not because of... Now, I'll get to the difference. Like they're calling, the reason why they're calling for the removal of the attempted stabbing of the bishop is because they believe that, well, it was live streamed not by the alleged attacker, a 16-year-old who can't be named because he's a minor, has been charged with a terrorist offence. Apparently, you can only be named as a minor if your name is Kyle Rittenhouse. Then you'll be plastered all over. Your name will be plastered all over the internet. But this was a live stream from the church. The Bishop Marmari Emmanuel, he live streams all of his sermons and Bible studies. He's got because he's got a massive online following. Not everyone can fit into the Good Shepherd Church. And so that is why it is live streamed. So is the eSafety Commissioner, is the Australian government going to order ministers, pastors, live streaming should be banned from houses of worship just in case there's some terrorist who comes in and attempts to stab them? And remember that he wasn't, the knife didn't actually malfunctioned. And so you will see in this, because apparently we're still allowed to show stills. So some are claiming the bishop was protected by divine intervention because he held up the cross and the teenager's terrorist, his knife, didn't flip out, and he actually cut his own finger off there in the process. So he's going to make a full recovery. Thank God he didn't lose an eye like Salman Rushdie did when he was subjected to a terrorist attack in New York. He's recently had his first TV appearance with one eye with Anderson Cooper on CBS's 60 Minutes. Now, we remember that with the Bondi stabbing, the reason why there was the misinformation that seemed to originate with the Aussie Cossack and Syrian girl, I don't know where they got their information from, then was repeated by Channel 7 that the Bondi stabber was Benjamin Cohen, not Joel Couchy. That's because there was an information vacuum. New South Wales police didn't announce the name of the Bondi stabber the next day. If there's no information, lack of information, then that's why misinformation can get out into the public realm. Though the police commissioner, Karen Webb, she said, you know, trust us, we will be your source of truth.
I also want to stress that there is misinformation being communicated across social media, and people should not share any of that information. The source of information should be from police and law enforcement authorities. And if people have concerns, they should check our websites, our socials, and any other direct news from law enforcement about current information. If we have current credible information about any risk or threat to the community, we will let them know. We will share that with the community. So please be assured that police will be the source of truth and not social media and misinformation.
Now, source of truth, where have I heard that before? Oh, yes, that's what New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinta Ardern told New Zealanders during her country's in and out COVID lockdowns. Remember, she locked down the whole country over single cases of COVID.
We will share with you the most up-to-date information daily. You can trust us as a source of that information. You can also trust the Director General of Health and the Ministry of Health. For that information, do feel free to visit at any time to clarify any rumour you may hear, covid19.govt.nz. Otherwise, dismiss anything else. We will continue to be your single source of truth. We will provide information frequently. We will share everything we can, everything else you see, a grain of salt. And so I really ask people to focus on
that. The most egregious example of that appears to be this text, which originated in Malaysia and has become a viral hoax in Australia and in New Zealand. How irresponsible is it, the people that are sharing that news of a lockdown imminent in New Zealand?
Yeah, and look, that's the kind of thing that adds to the anxiety that people feel. So I continue to share the message. New Zealanders must prepare. But do not panic, prepare. And when you see those messages, remember that unless you hear it from us, it is not the truth. And I really ask people, just visit covid19.govt.nz. It has all of the up-to-date information. And we will continue to provide everything you need to know.
Now, going back to the riot that was underway outside the church, Church of the Good Shepherd in Wakeley, as we were on air last night. So, as I was saying before, it's actually a form of victim blaming to say that they suspect that the teenage terrorist turned up because he knew it was being live streamed. And so are they going to order, as I said, are they going to ban all live streams? Are they going to ban me from live streaming, only accredited media? I don't know, just in case there's someone breaks into my home as we speak and decides to, I don't know, put a sword or a large machete or knife into me. I mean, is that, we know that that governments and media deep down, they would really like to go back to the good old days where it was just the TV networks, the radios, which are all controlled by the government, the Australian Communications and Media Authority, who is the overarching authority that the eSafety Commissioner sits under, and that will also be able to enforce the misdisinformation law onto the social media companies. So the justification for banning the vision of the bishop being stabbed, attempted murder, this terrorist attack, it is within the remit of the eSafety Commissioner with the passage of the Online Safety Act 2021 passed by Scott Morrison. So again, Julianne Moon Grant, she was empowered by the Morrison government. She was appointed for another 5-year term just before the federal election was about to be called in 2022. So apparently it should be banned because it gets Christians angry and they want to harm Muslims, but it also incites other terrorist attacks. So therefore, it must be removed from the internet. Now, as I said, it was live streamed by the church, so it makes it different from Brenton Tarrant's live streaming of his Christchurch massacre in March 2019, where he murdered 51 Muslims. And you remember that was when the first round of online censorship happened. Scott Morrison directed Facebook mainly to remove a whole bunch of Patriot pages. It's funny, there wasn't a hashtag not all nationalist patriots, I'll ride with you, hug a patriot, after a Brenton Tarrant committed that massacre. It's no that all of those who hold Australian nationalistic views are to blame, even though, and this is the thing, that you already have to be quite sick, evil, deranged in the head to be basically people radicalize themselves. I mean, it's talked about that they fall down a rabbit hole, and that's what creates terrorists and extremists, but terrorists, a religiously motivated extremist, politically motivated extremist, they've been committing terrorist acts before the invention of the internet. I mean, there was no social media when the September 11 attacks occurred. There was, obviously, the internet was around. Should the Australian government e-safety commissioner scrub from the internet the footage of the planes hitting the Twin Towers, because that instantly killed thousands of people, and then there's the people jumping from the buildings. Should we ban the footage of the JFK assassination? In the Tim's News Explosion intro, it shows Jack Ruby shooting in the police cells in Dallas, leave Harvey Oswald, the alleged assassin of JFK. Again, where do you draw the line? This is stuff that happens. I remember when I was in high school, we watched a Vietnam War documentary, and it showed the summary execution of a Viet Cong member in the street of South Vietnam, and you saw all the blood coming out of his head. It was shocking, but that's what happened in the Vietnam War. And the reason why public opinion turned against the Vietnam War and war in general is because people saw it on TV, all of the killing, the blood. And certainly the governments did not like that because, well, it showed the horrors of war. And also remember that Hamas live streamed its attack on southern Israel. And they showed that, well, they were proud of their barbarity, but it allowed Israel to show the world, like, look at these barbarians. And the IDF arranges screenings for people who want to see it. Apparently they've put them all together for a 47 minute film. So the Israeli government is actually screening this. If I remember that Rabbi Barclay asked Candace Owens, I can arrange a screening for you. Wolfish Naturalist says they don't want us to see the failure of the world's greatest success story of multiculturalism in Sydney, aka they don't want us to see brown violence. Yes, the melting pot, harmonious, greatest multicultural society on earth, social cohesion, that must be preserved at all costs. And this is bipartisan as well. They know deep down that there is more, there's more crime. There is more civil disquiet, and there is more community tension because, well, if you just look at history, different groups of people living in the one country, it hasn't lasted. Look at the Soviet Union, look at Yugoslavia, even look at India. I mean, that's split into three countries there. So Wolfish, he's bangs on this other point. It's about protecting the public's view of multiculturalism. They don't want the public to see just how much it is failing. And the New South Wales police, they have arrested already I think three people, and they've put out 12 of the alleged rioters who they want to speak to. One who was named Danny Massor was first person charged. He said he made a mistake, but he was pissed off at officers. He allegedly filmed himself kicking two police cars during the riot before uploading footage to Instagram. There was 2,000 people who turn up, and the police reckon there was about 50 who involved in the riots who'd simply gone there to start problems, which you'd say that most of them weren't members of the church, and there were certainly some there who who just turned up because they wanted to cause trouble. Though the SBS article, amazingly, it actually describes the features. One man of Caucasian appearance wearing black jeans. Another is described as being Mediterranean, Middle Eastern appearance. New South Wales police, they released some footage of themselves in dawn raids arresting several people. Obviously, the authorities, they were quite alarmed that there could be a Cronulla riot-style nights and nights of tit-for-tat violence. That didn't eventuate. There wasn't any disturbances at mosques on Friday prayers as well. I mean, I think there's certainly a lot of people have been thinking that it would have been with the Bondi stabbing murderer perpetrator Joel Gauci. He was shot by Amy Scott. It ended there. A lot of us are thinking, well, if he died in the attack, this teenager, then it would be all over. Now there is, I think we should change the law that minors who are charged with murder, rape, or terrorist offences should be named and tried as an adult. They should not be able to get 10 years or a minor sentence because they are a minor, pardon the pun. When I was a teen in Sydney, the Assyrian Kings gang were well known and just as violent as any Leb gang was. Didn't matter that they weren't Muslims, they are still kebabs. Well, the bishop, Marmari Emmanuel, he himself is a man of peace. His sermons have gone viral. He wants the violence to end in Israel, Palestine. He visited there and feels great sympathy with all the people who are collateral damage, and he forgave his attacker. So Bishop Marmari Emmanuel, he's originally born in Iraq, but he's been in Australia since the 1980s. This is just some of the message that he released when he was recovering in hospital.
Love never fails. 1 Corinthians 13:8. Love never fails. Whatever has happened to me personally, I thank the Lord Jesus. It's a huge blessing for me. I forgive whoever has done this act, and I say to him, you're my son, I love you, and I will always pray for you, and whoever sent you to do this, I forgive them as well, in Jesus' mighty name. I have nothing in my heart but love for everyone, whether that person is a Christian or not. It's totally beside the point. The Lord Jesus always taught us to love one another. Love God and love your neighbor like yourself. Whoever that neighbor is, we need to love them and respect them as we love and respect ourselves. So I have forgiven them. I'm praying for them. And for this young man, I say to you, you're my son and you'll always be in my praise. May the Lord Jesus forgive you. May the Lord Jesus bless you and show you the way, my dear son.
And now this 16-year-old who committed this terrorist attack, do we have to say alleged, even though it's been declared a terrorist incident? He was filmed afterwards in Arabic saying that if he hadn't insulted my prophet, I wouldn't have done this. This teenager, he was suspended from school, I think, twice at two different schools for carrying a knife. He got a good behavior bond at the beginning of this year for carrying a knife at a train station with intention to commit an indictable offence. He was kicked out of a number of local mosques or Muslim community centres, whatever they're called, because of his extreme views, yet they didn't report it to the terrorism hotline, even though they themselves had concerns. His parents have gone into hiding, and Dr. Jamal Rifi, who's, I think he's part of the, what is it, Lebanese Muslim Friendship Association. He did an interview with Shari Maxson last week, said that the parents have gone into hiding and that their son is a gentle soul but has fits of anger. And so basically he was a good boy who didn't do nothing. I contrast this with Joel Couchy's parents, who said their son was sick. They are sorry for what he did. They would have, they supported Amy Scott shooting him. They would have, well, shot him in the same circumstance, they feared for their lives. But the difference is that the teenage terrorist, he's a minor, so his parents are still responsible for him. Joel Couchy's parents, he was a 40-year-old man. His parents can't really do anything. Wolfie Schneitz just says, why is it that non-white parents can never take responsibility? I'm not sure about that. So let's move on to, because it's clear that once he recovers, Bishop Mar-Mari Emanuel, he is going to be a Bishop megastar. I mean, all of his base sermons have gone viral, but according to the mainstream media, they seem to, and the tabloids, their reports of his sermons seem to imply that he had it coming. So this was the Sydney Morning Herald. Hate me or accept me or reject me, the inflammatory words of the bishop stabbed in Sydney attacked. So it said, has previously claimed the Islamic prophet Muhammad and other religious figures cannot be compared to Jesus, made inflammatory comments towards the LGBTQI plus community, and fought against COVID lockdowns and vaccines. It says here, going down here, often live streaming services, YouTube, social media, has attracted many, including radical Christians, for his anti-LGBT sermons. In one, he said he would not recognize transgender people as human. When a man calls themselves a woman, he is neither a man nor a woman. You are not a human, then you are a it. I'm trying. That's my best impersonation of Bishop Emmanuel's Iraqi accent. Other viral live streams of his feature hardline views about American and Russian politics, as well as the claim that Satan founded the United Nations. A lot of people, a lot of Christians would say, yeah, that sounds about true. Speaking on Joe Biden's U.S. election win, one of his sermons posted to TikTok, Emmanuel said 100% it was rigged by the secret societies. And in a U.S. podcast, published a lengthy interview with him in which one portion was tagged woke Pope and Muhammad failed. So this was another one, the Daily Mail. A priest at Wakeley's Christ the Good Shepherd Church attacked in Second Sydney, stabbing Noel's an anti-vaxxer with a huge online following. And then it had also news.com.au going down here. It says that while his worldview and politics draw the ire of some, Emmanuel is seen as being considered instrumental in efforts to preserve Assyrian culture and heritage by others through language, traditions, religion, practices. It mentions that he read various humanitarian efforts to support Assyrian communities and also the Sydney community as well. So news.com.au is probably the most fairest there. He did feature in the news in 2021 because it's in the city of Fairfield, the Christ of the Good Shepherd Church. And remember, that's where the Delta variant was ripping through Sydney during 2021, and they were locked down the hardest. And so this was a 10 News report on, the things that he said that were against health advice. And Brad Hazzard, the New South Wales health minister at the time, made his displeasure known.
The government has issued a clear warning against anti-vaxxer misinformation after a fiery online sermon from a bishop inside the epicentre of this outbreak. The Fairfield holy man, whose preaching has been viewed by thousands of people since being shared yesterday, has not only criticised the lockdown but also the vaccine.
When Bishop Mari Emanuel speaks, the faithful listen.
Have we really lost the plot?
And his latest sermon goes against health advice. He's urged people not to get the COVID-19 jab.
Statistics say that those who have received the vaccine, the death rates out of those who were vaccinated were more than the ones who died because of the coronavirus.
And downplayed the risk the virus poses.
It's just another type of flu. No more, no less.
Bishop Emanuel leads an Assyrian church in Sydney's culturally diverse southwest. The area accounts for roughly two-thirds of the new cases of the latest deadly outbreak.
This virus is an extremely transmissible virus. It can kill you and it can kill your family.
The state government is urging people to listen to the health experts.
Anti-vaxxers obviously live in another universe.
It's worth pointing out that a lot of what the bishop said made sense. He spoke about the stress of the lockdown, the impact it's having on this community, and he also called on the Prime Minister and the Premier to do more to help people with financial and emotional hardship.
To reconsider these rules, which are absolutely out of limits.
Limits a suburb, a city, and a country have now reached. Michael Hammond for 10 News First.
Michael Hammond, the reporter, wearing a mask outside the church. What is he scared that because, well, he's been proven right, Bishop Emanuel, now, that the vaccine doesn't protect and it is just another flu. There's actually more RSV around at the moment. I mean, yeah, there are still these the forever COVIDians who wear masks. Was he afraid, Michael Hammond, there, that he was going to catch the anti-vax views from the bishop inside there? I mean, what? And masks have proven not to work either, Michael. And this is the other thing, the government deciding, they decided during COVID what was misinformation about vaccines, masks, treatments, and what the government said at the time, what was the single source of truth, turned out what was called misinformation has turned out to be correct, and what they were telling us turned out to mainly be wrong. Now, Peter Dutton, he originally was against the draft disinformation laws, and I wrote an article on the Unshackled last year, and so it talks about disinformation that causes harm, and this can be hatred against a group in Australian society on the basis of ethnicity, nationality, race, gender, sexual orientation, age, religion, physical or mental disability, disruption to the public order of society. That can be basically be anything. Harm to the integrity of the Australian democratic processes of this Commonwealth, state or local government authorities. Stuff that is extremely dangerous to our democracy. Harm to the health of Australians. Harm to the Australian environment. Economic or financial harm to Australians, the Australian economy sector of the Australian economy. So basically, if this draft law became law, then anything that's critical of the government, they can say, right, that threatens something in the operation of Australia, shut it down. And of course, this is already on the Public Safety Act was passed by the Morrison government. The Morrison government, they were originally drafting these disinformation laws. But in the aftermath of The Voice, where the No campaign was accused of spreading disinformation, though Jacinta Price rightfully called his campaign of no information, Peter Dutton, the Liberals, were opposed. But on Insiders yesterday, Peter Dutton, he was basically, any new law against free speech or giving more power to the e-safety commissioner. Sign us up.
So is there a case, do you think, for tougher action against social media companies?
No question at all. And I think there's a bipartisan position in relation to this. We know that the companies, and we've seen some of the comments from Elon Musk overnight, they see themselves above the law. And the Australian law here should apply equally in the real world as it does online. As Phil was pointing out before, you would be sued for defamation and you would be taken before the courts under various acts for publishing some of that which freely flows on the internet. And there's an age verification regime which has been recommended by the eSafety Commissioner from 2023. We think that's something the government should pick up straight away as well. But the Online Safety Act has significant powers in it. We passed it when we were in government and it needs to be enforced. And if the laws are inadequate and they need to be strengthened or added to, then we would support any effort from the government.
So there's two things, I suppose, here. One's the graphic content material, the takedown order that was issued. And as you referenced there, X or Twitter has said we're going to legally challenge that. What do you say to Twitter?
Well, I think there's a red herring in a sense here when Elon Musk says that there's not extraterritorial reach, that is, the Australian law can't apply to other parts of the world. I'm sure that's the case, but in terms of the content which is displayed here or broadcast here, well, the Australian law does apply. And the fact is that X and Meta and other companies have a presence here. They make literally, or at least turn over billions of dollars worth of revenue in the Australian economy. And I think what they're worried about is the flow onto other markets if Australia's laws are upheld. And that's all the more reason, I think, for us to take a stance. It's important for us, but for other democracies as well.
And then when it comes to the misinformation and disinformation, the government does have, well, it's working on draft laws to try and put in place some much tougher rules for the social media companies. Where are you at on this? Are you prepared to back such laws?
Yeah, we are, and happy to have a look at anything the government puts forward, as we've said over the last week with the horrendous scenes that we've seen. There's obviously AI tools that are available. There's a lot of technology, because you're talking about at scale, and people who get accounts closed down, pop up under another name and pseudonym otherwise. As Home Affairs Minister, we tried to get all of the Five Eyes partners together, the Home Affairs Ministers, to exert pressure, particularly in relation to the child protection space. These companies have snubbed their noses at governments in the United States, Canada, Britain, New Zealand, Australia for many, many years. The European Union, I think, has had a gutful as well. And they're allowing pedophiles to distribute through their networks images and videos of children being sexually abused. They're impeding the investigations of the police. So there are many aspects here that we need to deal with.
And this is the primary justification for further online regulation and the eSafety Commissioner to begin with. Everybody who is normal finds child sexual abuse abhorrent. The fact that it is circulating online, it is evil. This is always the justification for increased laws and regulations. But we are clearly seeing that these laws are clamped down on the free discussion of ideas between adults, I should say, because the eSafety Commissioner has also, you remember, going after Billboard Chris for alleged cyber abuse for this post. This woman, yes, she's a female, is part of a panel of 20 experts hired by The Who to draft their policy on caring for trans people. People who belong in psychiatric wards are writing the guidelines for people who belong in psychiatric wards. And so according to the eSafety Commissioner, this is going on to here. This is the key part that I'm satisfied that the, it's going back to the first page here. So Taking into account all of the circumstances, I've reached the view that an ordinary reasonable person will conclude that is likely material intended to cause serious harm to the complainant. This is because the material misgenders the complainant, reiterates that this point is deliberate, is likely intended to invalidate and mock the complainant's gender identity. The material also contains a statement that implies equates transgender identity with a psychiatric condition. This statement is deliberately degrading and suggests that all transgender people, and in this case, the complainant is particular, have something that is wrong about their psychology owing to gender identity. I haven't heard the, like, because obviously there's the pylon at the moment by the politicians and the safety commissioner against Twitter, because Spaceman bad, even though we liked his electric cars 10 years ago. Though I haven't heard much about from the eSafety Commissioner or politicians who post on Twitter X that explicit pornography should be taken down from Twitter X, because it is currently the only online social media platform where anyone can upload the most disgusting and depraved sexual porn you could possibly imagine. So remember that Democrat staffer who filmed himself having sex with a German official in the Senate. He uploaded that to Twitter X himself, uncensored, and also uncensored on Twitter X a Spanish local politician who filmed himself eating his own excrement at some sort of fetish party. So that apparently goes over the eSafety Commissioner's head. But got to crack down on the misgendering of a trans person who is into BDSM, bondage, bestiality, and drugs. Pico Smith says, Christ, the American Senate is a gay strip club now. Well, we're going to get back into, because didn't that just go down the memory hole? We're going to get down, sorry, that's the wrong phrase, get to later. Tucker Carlson's appearance on the Joe Rogan podcast about the blackmail of US politicians because they're all degenerates. So as you saw, going back to Peter Dutton, he is now he's done a 180. The comments underneath that are from people who are at least sympathetic to the Liberal Party and Peter Dutton's strong on borders reputation. They've said, we're done with the Liberal Party now. We're going to either vote Libertarian or One Nation first. I can't help but think that the reason why Peter Dutton all of a sudden supports the misinformation laws is because a Jewish man was wrongly named as the Bondi attacker. And last Friday, he spoke at a Hebrew synagogue in Melbourne, where, and I noticed that all of the Sky News, Zion News, commentators, they all, even though it was a Christian bishop who was stabbed, they said this is because there's been an increase in radical Islamist hate and anti-Semitism since the October 7 attack. They said, why doesn't the eSafety Commissioner go after the hate preachers and the anti-Semitism? And this is, again, the fallacy that conservatives or cuckservatives, as a lot of us call them, that they believe in that passing laws against free speech will protect who they choose to protect. And Sky News, it's basically a synagogue. So is the Australian newspaper, and the Liberal Party is basically 100% behind. Well, they're behind whatever Israel does is 100%, and has actually criticized Penny Wong for reaffirming what was a bipartisan position for a two-state solution. And this is what also Peter Dutton railed against at his Melbourne synagogue with an ill-fitting yarmulke.
We are here to join with you. We are here to work with you and to celebrate the wonderful story of your lives and journey. Australians who incite or choose violence over that message should face the full force of the law. Non-citizens who incite or choose violence should have their visas cancelled and be deported. We will in government have... We will in government have a zero-tolerance approach for the intolerable behaviours of a few who threaten the Australian achievement for the many. We must also tackle the root causes of anti-Semitism. Since October 7, Hamas's cause has regrettably found its champions and cheer squads in many democratic nations, not just in ours. Let me conclude with a comment on Israel. As you know, the Foreign Minister recently implied that the current government is prepared to recognise a Palestinian state. It was Hamas's barbarity on October 7 which has set back the goal of a two-state solution. Until Hamas is defeated, a two-state solution isn't even conceivable because Hamas will always pose an existential threat to the state of Israel. That's why I characterise the Foreign Minister's remarks as utterly illogical, as ill-timed and inappropriate. The Foreign Minister has significantly damaged our relations with our most important ally in the region, Israel. It was a reckless act of a Foreign Minister that I've not seen in my 22 years in the Parliament. The Coalition Government under my leadership will always distinguish the lawful from the lawless, always differentiate civilisation from barbarism, and always discern the good from the evil. This is why the unequivocal condemnation of Hamas is right. And that is why we must unambiguously denounce Iran's military attack on Israel and the regime's sponsoring of terrorist groups across the region. Israel has every right to defend its territory and its people.
Now, it looked like he had a beanie on. It didn't look like a yarmulke as well. I mean, couldn't he get, Ben Shapiro, he makes his yarmulke. It's a perfect fit. And it's, he has jet black hair and his yarmulke is jet black. So a lot of the time you don't even realize when you see him on his show that he's wearing a yarmulke because it just blends into his hair. But yeah, Peter Dutton, that's like, it looks like he's wearing an ill-fitting beanie rather than a yarmulke there. Now, I do agree that the Free Palestine, pro-Palestine, whatever they're called, these far left socialists are morons. I mean, that's just being pro-Palestine, Free Palestine, that's just their cause at the moment. But remember, it used to be Extinction Rebellion, Just Stop Oil, or they're protesting for trans rights. I mean, it's just their thing at the moment. And of course, we had the pro Palestines in Melbourne have a week of action. Remember, blocking off Hoddle Street, disrupting traffic, just Extinction Rebellion tactics used for pro Palestine. And then also, if you've seen at Columbia University over in the United States, an Ivy League university, students have taken it over and declared it New Palestine. And the university has said to Jewish academics, go home until the occupation is over. And Susan Sarandon, the communist actress, has turned up as well. She's still at it after all of these years. Yeah, clearly she doesn't care about being cancelled by the Jews in Hollywood again. And then they occur every week, the Free Palestine protests in Melbourne, as they do in London. And there was an incident where the Metropolitan Police threatened to arrest a Jewish man with a yarmulke for being openly Jewish.
You are quite openly Jewish. This is a pro-Palestinian march. Right. I'm not accusing you of anything, but I'm worried about the reaction to him now. You've been escorted out of this area so you can go about your business, go where you like freely, or if you choose to remain here, because you are causing a breach of peace between you and some other people, you will be arrested.
If I remain here, you will arrest me.
Because your presence here is antagonizing a large group of people that we can't deal with all of them.
Watching your movement. That's right. That's right. We're all gonna watch your movement and record you. Wait, go. The police ain't gonna help you listen.
So whoever's got the biggest mob, which is the left, or whoever's got the most threatening violent mob, they get to set the rules. I forget what's the current thing for the left. This is how they always operate. And I know that Victoria Police are piss weak when it comes to dealing with the violent Antifa terrorists. So this was the Metropolitan Police statement. The use of the term openly Jewish by one of our officers is hugely regrettable. We know it will have caused offence to many. We reiterate our apology. We have reflected on the strength of the response to our previous statement. This was their second go. In an effort to make a point about the policing of protests, we caused further offence. This was never our intention. We have removed the statement and we apologise. Being Jewish is not a provocation. Jewish Londoners must feel able to be safe in the city. Our commitment to protecting the public extends to all communities across London, and it's important that our public statements reflect more clearly than they did today. And there was also the mayor of Brussels in Belgium, who's shut down the National Conservatives Conference, where Nigel Farage, Suella Braverman, and the Prime Minister of Hungary, Viktor Orban, were attending because it would threaten the public order, because Brussels is, well, it's full of no-go zones. Now it is basically a brown city now, the capital of the EU. So we are seeing just not online censorship now, but real life censorship. You can't gather here because this will threaten social cohesion, social harmony. It reminds me of has anyone seen the Family Guy episode where Peter Griffin's PTV gets shut down by the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, for being indecent? And then the FCC officials try to censor real life. And there was also, remember, the South Park movie, Bigger, Longer, Larger, Uncut, where this was in the 90s, where, well, parents were blaming television for their children's misbehavior, and they were demanding V-chips in TV. And so they put a V-chip in Cartman to stop him swearing and cursing, and then he gets an electroshock. And this is the thing about we need to censor the internet for adults to protect the children. How about parental responsibility? And the thing these days is that too many parents don't actually want to parent. They actually want to stick an iPad in front of their children to so they can have them occupied while they do whatever they want to do, dump their children in daycare while they corporate chases, rat races. And so gone are the days where it seems where parents take their children to the zoo or the museum or science works to experience the real world, take them to nature. Well, it's too expensive because of the cost of living these days to go to a family-friendly learning, or like say to a Luna Park or a bowling alley. These days it's cheaper for the $15 a month subscription to some of the streaming services, or just put Bluey on, even though Bluey just had an episode with a same-sex couple there. Disney, Nickelodeon, ABC, BBC, I mean, they all insert the groomer agenda and also adult references there. I spoke to you about the Investigation Discovery miniseries Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV with Nickelodeon, how Drake Bell was molested by the dialogue coach Brian Peck, who some people suspect also molested a Leonardo DiCaprio. One of his roles on the All That show was as Pickle Boy, and the guest stars he put a pickle through the doorknob to the guest star like it was a glory hole there. So this is the thing. Parents, they just want to delegate to strangers and groomers, and obviously they are being quite successful in shaping the minds of the next generation, but that is not a reason to censor the content, because adults should be able to view, whether it be a film, art, books, that if it features consenting adults and it's for adults, then I don't have a problem with it. Now, we don't live in a country where we do have the First Amendment. Julianne Mann Grant, she is an American, and she's quite happy that she's now running the internet, it seems, in a country which doesn't have the First Amendment.
Hi, I'm Julianne Mann Grant, Australia's e-safety commissioner.
My global summit as the e-safety commissioner.
Do you believe that the First Amendment has too high a bar for the online era?
The First Amendment does not apply in Australia. The First Amendment does not apply in Australia.
I know, but you're an American, so I thought in general, as a standard for freedom of expression, do you think that's too high of one?
No, I don't apply that. I apply the laws of the Australian government.
Are you setting yourself up as an arbiter of what should and should not be seen online?
No, I am not. The First Amendment does not apply in Australia.
Well, we have a range of graduated powers. There could be civil proceedings, and we could take them to court, or we could fine them. Of course, the quantum of the fine would depend on the gravity of the noncompliance. But we can use graduated tools like linked leash and notices. So if they fail to remove the content, then we can go to the search engines such as Google or Bing to really minimize the amount of content the Australians can see.
The First Amendment does not apply in Australia.
And that mashup was also by Craig Kelly, a director of the One Nation Party. Dawn Browning says, if news is banned, how are we supposed to know if we are in peril? Well, ignorance is supposed to be bliss. Well, I just watched a Netflix documentary on the Cold War, and well, they couldn't cover up the Chernobyl attack, meltdown, I should say, in the Soviet Union, because, well, people were in peril there. So, I mean, even the Soviets, with all of their censorship, told the people when they were in peril. Peak Osman says, so this American overlord is going to dictate to us lowly Australians rightio. Well, that's totally going to install a sense of loyalty, camaraderie between our people. Now, apparently another reason why we need to, well, regulate what is on social media and online is because, well, it can lead to violence against women. And Mark Dreyfus, the Attorney General of all people, remember he pointed his finger at female journalist Olivia Casely and said, "Do not interrupt." And he said, "I will not be apologizing for acting in accordance with a high court decision. Your question is absurd." So he has told men need to step up in domestic violence crisis. So now, as I was saying, that in the Bondi stabbing, the feminists were upset that that was not deemed a terrorist attack ideologically motivated by incel culture, even though there is no concrete proof. It is just suspected that he targeted women, and that's what his father suspects because he couldn't get a girlfriend. So Attorney General Mark Dreyfus, in an address at a family violence symposium, said that one death of a woman at the hands of a man is one too many, but one death a week is an epidemic and it must end. And it quotes here that Sherelle Moody's Counting Dead Women, she calls herself a femicide researcher in 2019. She claimed that after firefighters fight bushfires, they go home and beat their partners. But she misquoted a report that said that there is an increase in domestic violence in bushfire-affected communities afterwards. So this is here, Dreyfus says. So last month, three independent MPs called on the government to do more to stop gendered violence, including Zali Steggall, a member for Wentworth, who asked the government to review the national plan. She said, "Well, women are shaping these policies and driving these responses. Ending this epidemic of violence has to involve men stepping up." And so what does this even mean, men step up? Obviously, we know that at the crux of feminists, whether it's the TERF, second wave feminists, or third wave feminists, feminism is about hating men, misandry, that men are inherently bad people, and also the women who are brainwashed by the patriarchy. Because remember, there's those political lesbians who claim that women can't consent to sex with men because of patriarchy. So women are stupid apart from them. They're too stupid to know what's good for them. Only the enlightened feminists are the ones who know what is good for other women. But we know where these generalized statements men need to step up. There's the argument that a sexist joke that is a gateway to violence against women. That the line, what is it? What's a joke women produce eggs and milk? That's why they belong in the kitchen. That joke does not lead to women being killed. By telling that joke, you're not inciting women against violence against women. It's as Joan Rivers famously would say, "Lighten the fuck up. These are just jokes, you assholes." The funniest woman of all time, who actually did prove that women are funny. But I digress here. The past week has been extremely embarrassing for Australia. I haven't been this embarrassed for our nation since our COVID zero strategy. And it's put us in the same league as Brazil, who, one of their Supreme Court justices, Alexandre de Moraes, is threatening to block the whole of X because he won't comply with his rulings to ban some politicians from X. They've banned Brazil, Bolsonaro, from running at the next election for inciting an insurrection. I don't agree with these countries who bar people from running in democratic elections because, well, they've done something that they deem untoward. Let the voters decide. So, yes, sadly, we have overshadowed Brazil's attempt to censor the internet. Is this where it's heading? Is Julian Mangrant going to order the ISPs to just block X? And will Anthony Albanese and Peter Dutton comply? Now, moving on to the rest of the world. As in the UK, the sinking Rishi Sunak Conservative government just gets worse and worse. So Rishi, he passed the smoke-free generation bill that nobody born after 2009 will be able to legally purchase cigarettes. New Zealand's coalition government recently repealed Jacinta Ardern's smoke-free there. And remember, Rishi Sunak's supposed to be a conservative. Believe in individual choice, but this is, he's unelected. He just decided to foist this on the UK people, and because the British Labour Party also supports the nanny state, they ushered it through, even though there was a Tory rebellion. Dawn Browning says, zero votes. I assume you mean for the Conservative Party. There's a lot of British patriots, nationalists, conservatives, traditionalists who are hoping that the Tories get zero seats, zero votes. They are an absolute failure pile of steaming garbage. They are completely useless. They have just totally destroyed Britain over the past 14 years. They are going to get slaughtered at the local government elections on Thursday, the 4th of May. Sadiq Khan is going to be re-elected, the Mayor of London, in a landslide. Though Rishi Sunak, he's not done with announcing new bold policies. He's going to crack down on GP sick notes. Well, if you can get a GP appointment under the British NHS.
Right now, the gateway to ill health benefits is writing too many off, leaving them on the wrong type of support and with no expectation of trying to find a job with all the advantages that that brings. In 2011, 20% of those doing a work capability assessment were deemed unfit to work. But the latest figure now stands at 65%. That's wrong. People are not three times sicker than they were a decade ago. And the world of work has changed dramatically. Now, of course, those with serious debilitating conditions should never be expected to work. But if you have a low-level mobility issue, your employer could make reasonable adjustments, perhaps including adaptations to enable you to work from home. And if you're feeling anxious or depressed, then of course you should get the support and treatment you need to manage your condition. But that doesn't mean we should assume you can't engage in work. That's not going to help you. And it's not fair on everyone else either. So we're going to tighten up the work capability assessment such that hundreds of thousands of benefit recipients with less severe conditions will now be expected to engage in the world of work and be supported to do so. Second, just as we help move people from welfare into work, we've got to do more to stop people going from work to welfare. Now, the whole point of replacing the sick note with the fit note was to stop so many people just being signed off as sick. Instead of being told you're not fit for work, the fit note provided the option to say that you may be fit for work, with advice about what you can do and what adaptions or support would enable you to stay in or return to work quickly.
Now, Rishi Sunak, he was the Chancellor in the Boris Johnson Conservative government that said that people shouldn't go to work if they test positive on a lateral flow COVID test, or what we refer to as a rapid antigen test, even if they weren't sick. This was the thing. Remember that even if you felt perfectly fine, having no symptoms was one of the symptoms. And so you should take a test to find out if you're sick. And that means that you need to stay off work for 7-14 days. And now Rishi Sunak says there's too many people off sick. And now we have the rapid test are now expanded for RSV and influenza A, B. Remember before COVID, you knew if you were sick and felt like shit, your nose was basically snot was gussing out. Well, I know that that's what happens when I have a cold or a flu. If you're vomiting, obviously, if you vomit, you're sick. If you have a swollen leg or these sorts of things, you know if you are sick. You don't. It's the governments that have created this culture. This is why there are still so many sick days, because people take a test to find out if they're sick, even if they don't know that they're sick. And Dawn Browning says, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Now, let's move on to US news. And so CNN has called the Republican House Speaker, Mike Johnson, an unlikely Churchill, because he assisted the Biden administration and the Democrats get through $60 billion in military aid for Ukraine. And he got about half the Republicans to vote for it. Marjorie Taylor Greene is threatening to depose him. He sort of appeared out of nowhere as a compromise speaker after Kevin McCarthy was ousted. And did anyone see the scenes in the U.S. Congress of the Ukrainian flags being waved in Congress? And Mike Johnson is also strongly in favor of aid to our dear friend Israel, and he said it is biblical to support Israel.
Israel is a critical ally of ours, and I think most people understand the necessity of this funding. They're fighting for their very existence. They're the only stable democracy in the Middle East. I mean, of course, there's, for those of us who are believers, it's a biblical admonition to stand with Israel. We will, and they will prevail as long as they're with them. And this is an important, very important symbolic gesture and a very important replenishment of their stockpiles, for example, of the Iron Dome. The reason they shot down all those drones and missiles in the last attack by Iran is because we assisted with that. I think the American people understand the importance of that.
Yes, your tax dollars paid for the rocket show over Israel, and then we had Israel's retaliatory rocket show in Iran. And basically this was both nations firing rockets at each other, not aiming to kill anyone, basically. And they both said at the end, Iran and Israel, well, we showed them. As so it was basically just a fireworks show, basically. So obviously both countries didn't want a war. They know how deadly that would be for their populations and Israel-Iran war, and Biden told the Israelis he wasn't interested. And so it's fizzled out now. And so I'm glad that there is some restraint. But hey, if you don't really want to fire rockets to harm the other side, then how about not launch them, fire them at all? But that would mean that the military-industrial complex, that would not keep circulating there, because the Ukraine bill is good for American military weapons jobs as well. So it keeps all of the jobs in the shipyards. So military industrial complex keeps on churning and making sure that politicians, that if they vote against military spending, well, there's going to be angry unemployed people in your electorate who, well, they're only employed because of the other taxpayers. And so that's one tactic to control politicians. The other one is, well, blackmail. Now, Mike Johnson, the Speaker, he has a Christian covenant marriage, but could this about face be Ukraine because, well, maybe he's not as Christian as he says he is? I'm not accusing, implying. I'm just saying that the deep state, they're able to blackmail and get the politicians to do their bidding. And this is just one of the things that Tucker Carlson talked about on his epic Joe Rogan appearance, which I saw triggered Jeremy Borang over at the Daily Wire, or the Deep State Wire, you could call it. This is when he was talking about the politicians all scared of the intel agencies because, well, they're all degenerates, or they're scared that the intel agencies will set them up to be degenerate. So make of this what you will.
And by the way, you know, whatever, that's all I'll say.
By the way.
No, I mean, people don't say that because they're worried about getting punished. They're worried about someone putting kiddie porn on their computer.
Right.
Members of Congress are terrified of the intel agencies. I'm not guessing at that. They've told me that, including people on the intel committee, including people who run the intel committee, the people whose job it is to oversee and keep in line these enormous secretive agencies whose budgets we can't even know. They're black budgets. They're the parents. The agencies are the children. They're afraid of the agencies. That's not compatible with democracy. Democracy is a really simple system, even representative democracy like ours. The people rule. They do so through elections. They express their preference through voting. They send their people to the capital city to run the government on their behalf. Whenever you have unelected people who are not accountable to anyone making the biggest decisions, you don't have a democracy. You have something else, another system. I would call it a tyranny or whatever you want to call it. It's not a democracy. So that's like super obvious. It's playing out in front of everyone and no one cares and no one does anything about it. And I think the reason is because they're threatened. And if you look at the committee chairman who allow this shit to happen year after year, they're all, and I don't know, people say, oh, they're compromised or being blackmailed or whatever. I don't have evidence of that, but I know them and they all have things to hide. I know that for a fact. And so it's not a stretch of imagination to imagine that, you know, some committee chairman who's allowing warrantless spying on Americans to continue or whatever abuse they're allowing, knowing fully or hiding the truth about UAPs, ignoring the UAP Disclosure Act of 2023, like, why are they doing that? It's not impossible to imagine that some guy with a drinking problem or a weird sex life, and that's very common up there, that's why they're doing it. Because they don't want to be exposed. I don't have evidence of that. I don't have proof of that.
Right.
But that's not a crazy thing to assume that that could be happening. And I said to somebody, a very powerful person, the other day in a conversation in my kitchen, an elected official, holds a really senior position, a very famous person. I was going crazy. I was so mad about all this stuff and about the warrantless spying and about the funding for these insane wars. And I said to the guy who serves in one of the legislative bodies, I got so mad my dogs were afraid. They're like, well, why are you yelling? Because I don't yell at home. But I was like, all these people are controlled. They're all, you know, got weird sex lives and all these things are hiding and they're being blackmailed by the intel agencies. And he said, and I'm quoting, I know. I was like, okay, so at this point, we're just sort of admitting that's real. Like, why do we allow that to continue?
The having people compromise thing, God, that's an old story.
Now, as I was saying before, this is why the gay Democrat staffer who had sex in the Senate immediately got memory hold because, well, and the Republicans did not make an issue of it because, well, a lot of their members and staffers would be engaged in similar proclivities. And I also reported on the most recent sex scandal in the UK, William Ragg, who I sent a picture of his cock to a blackmail on Grindr, then sent the numbers of 14 colleagues, and then two of them sent their cocks to the blackmailer. And we don't know who this blackmailer works for. And the Conservative government, they're trying to cover up who are the other two Tory MPs who sent pictures of their cocks to this blackmailer. Who is the blackmailer? Is it a foreign adversary, or is it somebody who works in the deep state? Now, over in the US, the mainstream media there also likes to think of themselves as the single source of truth. They'd like to go back to the days where there's just the TV networks and the radio stations and the newspapers. And National Public Radio, they were, I'm not sure if they are really in damage control, because a whistleblower wrote that after Trump got elected, all objectivity was thrown out the window. It was about, basically pursuing Trump at all costs. And the NPR CEO, Catherine Ma, this is her TED Talk talking about that. The truth is actually irrelevant, even though they sell themselves as don't go to misinformation on social media, go to us, trusted sources. But here she admits the truth doesn't actually matter.
But the hard things, the places where we are prone to disagreement, say politics and religion. Well, as it turns out, not only does Wikipedia's model work there, it actually works really well. Because in our normal lives, these contentious conversations tend to erupt over disagreement about what the truth actually is. But the people who write these articles, they're not focused on the truth. They're focused on something else, which is the best of what we can know right now. And after 7 years of working with these brilliant folks, I've come to believe that they are onto something, that perhaps for our most tricky disagreements, seeking the truth and seeking to convince others of the truth might not be the right place to start. In fact, our reverence for the truth might be a distraction that's getting in the way of finding common ground and getting things done. Now, that is not to say that the truth doesn't exist, nor is it to say that the truth isn't important. Clearly, the search for the truth has led us to do great things, to learn great things. But I think if I were to really ask you to think about this, one of the things that we could all acknowledge is that part of the reason we have such glorious chronicles to the human experience and all forms of culture is because we acknowledge there are many different truths. And so in the spirit of that, I'm certain that the truth exists for you and probably for the person sitting next to you. But this may not be the same truth. This is because the truth of the matter is very often, for many people, what happens when we merge facts about the world with our beliefs about the world. So we all have different truths. They're based on things like where we come from, how we were raised, and how other people perceive us.
It reminds me of Lionel Hutz from The Simpsons. It tells Mark, there's the truth. And the truth. And again, it also reminds me of AOC. Remember that she said that people are more concerned about being factually correct than being morally correct. Now, another bit of a video that I'm sure Julie Inman Grant will probably want to censor from Twitter X in the world is that of Antifa conspiracy theorist Max Azzurro setting himself on fire, self-immolating outside the Lower Manhattan courthouse where Donald Trump is facing his hush money trial. Accused of falsifying business records, the hush money that was paid to porn star Stormy Daniels, who allegedly had an affair with. And the 37-year-old Florida man had pamphlets which surrounded him as he burned. The pages included a link to a Substack newsletter where more of his writings could be found. He left behind a manifesto where he criticized liberal conservatives, the media, and the collapse of the American dream. Said sharp rise in apocalyptic messaging. Climate change will kill us all. COVID will kill us all. Vaccines will kill us all. AI will kill us all, no matter the bubbles we ascribe to. He's the second deranged, politically motivated self immolator. There was that pro-Palestine young guy earlier. I can't remember the name, but he also came from a family full of COVID crazies. So Max Cesare, he died as well. So did the other person. They're all copying that Buddhist monk from South Vietnam in the 1960s self-immolated himself. Maybe Julian Mann Grant, maybe she needs to delete all images of that Buddhist monk setting himself on fire, since it's inspiring copycats 60 years later. See, it all makes sense. Now, onto the trial itself. Have you seen now all the jurors' names are suppressed? And the absurd thing about it's always been the absurd thing about the rules around juries is that basically forcing them to live under a rock, basically live in solitary confinement where they don't have access to outside information. That's the only way to sort of to make sure that they're not unduly influenced. But this is interesting here. It's Manhattan, New York, a very liberal area. There is one Trump juror who only gets their news from Trump's Truth Social. It is New York, so there are 8 jurors who get their news from the New York Times. Now, there's 12 jurors and 6 alternates. That in case one of the, because it's a long trial, will be a, so if there is a juror who has to be disqualified, there's a spare. They had because I've been watching documentaries about the O.J. Simpson trial since he died recently. They had 12 alternates and they nearly ran out of alternates because there was so many who weren't truthful on their questionnaire. This is the only trial that there's likely to be a verdict for Trump this year. It's the most ridiculous charge of all of them. Dawn Browning says, as well as the 2 Victorian emulators during lockdowns, well, they set fire to themselves inside their cars, I remember. So, yes, there is, well, COVID certainly created a lot more mentally ill people. And going back to, well, there is so much the online harm to children is just so bad at the moment. Well, you locked children in their homes for 2 years, banned them from going to school. And so basically the online world was their only world. You made them go online. Again, government's responsible for things they're trying to crack down on now. Linda, you've just turned up at the end of the show. I have run out of time just briefly mention that Brittany Higgins released a statement where she admitted that Linda Reynolds and Fiona Brown had been hurt, and for that I am sorry. My perceptions and feelings about what happened in the days and weeks after my rape are different from theirs. I deeply regret that we have not found common ground, because Federal Court Justice Michael Lee found that there was no evidence for a political cover-up, and Linda Reynolds said she'll withdraw her lawsuit against Brittany Higgins if she comes out with a statement and says there's no political cover-up, which I think that Brittany Higgins should do, and then we can just forget about Brittany Higgins, Bruce Lehman, and everyone can move on, though we've got the, it was back in the news today, the original mushroom lady, Erin Patterson, probably won't go to trial next year because there's a dispute about the location, whether it'll be in Melbourne or down at the Latrobe Valley where she lives. But that is the end of Tim's News Explosion for another whirlwind week. Now, Trad Tasman Talk, our one-off show with myself and Dewey DeBoer, didn't air last Friday night as scheduled. You would have been aware that is because Dewey got sick with a mystery illness. I don't think it was the new mutant strain of monkeypox that's in the Congo, because Dewey is he wears a mask around his around his pants, so he is not at risk from getting monkeypox. But there's also is reports of a parrot chlamydia outbreak in Argentina with 20 seriously ill. Is this maybe something that the globalists are spreading so they can damage Javier Milei, the Argentinian president, to say, see, a libertarian can't handle a health crisis? I'll get into parrot chlamydia maybe another time. But Trad Tasman Talk this Friday evening on the Uncheckered and Right Minds YouTube channels, 6 p.m. Melbourne time and 8 p.m. Melbourne time. Have a reflective Anzac Day. As you can see, I've got my Anzac badge already on. I've got my supply of Anzac cookies. A little bit tokenistic, I know, but it's the thought that counts. I tried to take a little bite there, but it's taking me a while to chew there. So that's it for Tim's News Explosion tonight. I will let you know when there is another Wilms Front. So a interview show, which are normally on Sundays at 9 p.m., but I will see you for another Tim's News Explosion next Monday evening. So 9 p.m. Melbourne time on the Wilms Front channels. Remember to go to our Substack, theunshackled.substack.com, where you can take out a membership, $5 per month, $50 per year, or $500 per year for a founding member. Then there's also the unshackled.net/membership, where there is the bronze $5 per month, silver $10 per month, gold $25 per month, and platinum $50 per month. There are new reports for Richard Wollstonecraft continuing to come out. His three-part with David Thrussell. All three parts have been released now. There'll be another report this Friday as well. So stay safe, stay sane, stay informed, and you will always get the unfiltered actual what is really happening. Not, as you know, I don't believe in censoring the news, and I try to bring you, without violating the terms of service of YouTube, and certainly without violating Australia's increased censorship laws, bringing you as much of what is really happening as possible. So good night, everybody.
Tim's News Explosion. 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 Tim's News Explosion.